Yo.
How you going?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You nervous?
Not really.
Me either. All right. Is my sound coming through? Because I got a new mic.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, good. Awesome.
Just tap. What kind of mic is it?
It's a SL600.
Okay, yeah. It sounds like something's... What? How is it set up? It's like a...
It's on an arm.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
Is it clear?
Yeah, no, that sounds really good.
Awesome. So what's your intention for this talk? Is there anything that you're really wanting to cover specifically?
No, just have some fun, really. Entertaining, insightful, inspiring, as long as it's those three things.
We're talking about sex, so I'm pretty sure it'll be entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your... like, what's your reason for wanting to do it? Is there anything, is there a topic coming up for you?
No, I was just been working a lot on, like, my mission and my goals and stuff. And I was just thinking, like, oh, that talk Walla did with
Michael. Like,
hey?
With Michael.
With Michael, and how you said, like, we're taught up to be fucking nice and kind and, you know, oh, don't say that, Mitt. Oh, only, I literally remember so distinctly and clearly in my head, like my mum saying, well, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And it's like, sit in the corner and be fucking nice. Like, that's like my life story. It's like, sit in the corner, don't be annoying.
Pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, just to give you a quick insight into my life, like, my dad was actually a bit of a rebel child, a rebel father.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that at the time, but he was like he would have been known as like the town, like, he's not a good father because he didn't pull my head in.
Right. Okay. So he's getting.
I've actually realized he did that deliberately because he never wanted to suppress me.
Yeah, right.
But I would have looked like a brat.
Right. So he's like, okay, I'm going to let everyone criticize me because I know this would be best for my daughter.
I just think he had less fucks
yeah.
about what people thought of him. Yeah. But yeah. I look back now, you know, and I look back and I think he would have been judged so severely by a lot of people about, you know, his feral kids.
Yeah.
Like not keeping your kids under control. But I look on it now and I'm like, he had it sorted because he just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and not saying we didn't get disciplined because we did, but it's just interesting now I can reflect on it as an adult, his resilience to not conform.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I feel like the podcast started as soon as he joined.
I'm pretty, well, this is the thing, like, I've been told my whole life that I'm rude and abrupt.
Yeah.
But I've actually realized I'm just not scared to talk. Because he never quashed me. So I don't have that filter. Like, everybody has a filter. I don't have it.
Well, you've got to have some sort of, like, have you ever held in a fart in public?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Like, when I say filter, when I say filter, I mean, like, when I say something, I know that it's from my heart. I'm not trying to upset anybody. I'm not trying to control the situation, but I don't really, I'm just aligned with what I say.
Yeah. I get that as well. When, people say to me, usually my girlfriend would be like, oh my God, are you like manipulating me? Are you trying to, or like, you just manipulate people. And I'm like, fucking oath I do. I manipulate the fuck out of people.
Yeah. And I judge people too.
Yeah, it's more like I have a very, I believe that the world does revolve around me because I create the world in my own head. And if I have a mission of uniting the world with love and wisdom, I wanna manipulate you so you stop judging yourself, stop judging others, so you can fucking love yourself and stop, like, that's what I wanna manipulate to. Is that like immoral of me? Like,
who knows? Is it is it manipulation or is it just exposing you to different information? Who knows?
That's true.
Right. So, are we good?
Yeah. Welcome to the Learning, Love and Wisdom podcast, everyone. I have an amazing, provocative, hopefully get your kids in here for this one. Turn the speakers up. Get your grandma in. Send it around. Share it on social media. We're talking about sex. Welcome, Walla. She's a somatic sex educator, yeah?
I am.
Okay, awesome. What's the difference? Hold on, because I saw your name and I'm like, well, what's, is that like a sex coach or sex therapist versus a sex educator, what you do? Like, what's the difference?
Okay, so a cognitive or clinical sex therapist will help unpack your cognitive behavioral patterns. So they will help you with triggers, traumas and traits, but they don't help you with the felt sense and pleasure. So I help people understand what pleasure is in their bodies.
And what's the normal sort of outlook someone has on pleasure, and how do you change their perspective, expand their awareness around it?
So I teach people how to touch. We're not taught how to touch. We just do the best we can with what we know, or we do what worked before. So I actually teach people how to touch in a way that has integrity.
Okay, tell me about that. What does that mean?
So we quite often touch another person the way we want to be touched.
Okay.
So yep. I help people understand what questions they need to ask in order to know whether they're touching another person for their pleasure or for their own.
Okay, yeah, and that's like the quadrant thing you talk about. Can you explain that? Because I think that's gonna
because there's no diagram involved, I'll just give you the brief overview. We need to be able to understand when we're giving and when we're receiving. And it is a myth or a mistake to assume that just because you're doing an action, that you're giving to your partner. We need to be able to make friends with the fact that we could be doing an action but actually receiving from our partner. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Like a foot massage.
Like a foot massage.
Dude, that changed. That changed my life. I heard you talk and you were like, you know, you can actually touch your partner and you're the one receiving. And I was like, wait. So when I go up to my girlfriend and say, can I massage your feet for me? And she's like, are you a weirdo? You're like rubbing my feet. I'm like, let me rub your feet.
Yeah. So I give people the structure to be able to understand who is touching who and for whose pleasure.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was mind blowing to me the first time I heard it, but,
Did it make sense though?
It makes sense to me when I heard it and now it does. It's like, I think that comes down to communication. Like, hey, do you like it? What do you like when I do, when I touch you? Or what's your favorite thing I do for you? Or how do you?
Those questions are kind of, they're laced with a whole heap of social conditioning though.
Hmm.
So unless you have the skills and the ability to have an uncomfortable conversation, then you're probably going to get an answer that's laced with a thick dose of nice and polite.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, I often hear, oh, you know, I say, well, how do you know your partner's actually enjoying it? And they're like, oh, I just go by body language. I can tell by their body. And I'm like, oh. Which is common. It's not uncommon, but it's also an unreliable source because we're all raised not to offend anybody. So, you know, that whole moaning and groaning and the arching of the back may or may not be real.
Mm. So how do we peel that onion back and sort of frame the situation so that we can say, hey, well, how do you, I guess, have those uncomfortable conversations? What's the best way to go about it you've found? Or
look, there's this, there is a technique and a method to do it. It's not something that takes 5 minutes. There's a lot of unpacking that people need to be able to do in order to have that uncomfortable conversation safely. But I suppose what we need to be able to make understand is how vulnerable someone feels when they do want something, but they just can't ask for it cleanly and clearly.
Mm.
And that can often create so much confusion, because I have to tell people that if you're communicating with a lot of hinting and hoping, it usually leaves people wishing and waiting.
Oof, yeah. Write that down.
Yeah, definitely. And so when you communicate with a partner where you're hinting and hoping, and the other, they're like, oh, you know, I just don't understand. Well, it actually creates resentment on both sides, because the person who's trying to get a need met is trying to ask for it, but they don't feel safe enough to do it. So they hint and hope. And then they think, well, if you loved me, you should know what I want.
Yeah.
Right. So they do all that hinting stuff, and they're like, well, he mustn't love me, or she mustn't love me, or they mustn't love me, whatever, you know, they just don't get me. Mm. And then the other person's like, oh, for crying out loud, just spit it out. Like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And like, well, I've been telling you, but you really haven't. You really haven't. So yeah. Then it just creates a whole heap of confusion.
Mm.
And we're not taught how to do it. We're just not.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dive down the that rabbit hole and go back to childhood and the conditioning, the social conditioning, like you mentioned. Because I was taught, as I said before we started rolling, is I remember when I was a child, I was in like the dining room, and I said something to my brother, and my mum looked at me and she said, "And if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all." And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I've got to sit in the corner and not make a fuss and, you know, make sure I listen to people and fit into their box and don't tell people what I want, just fucking go along with it.
Yep.
Oh,
well, it's just a common practice that it's more important to do as you're told than how you feel about it.
Mm.
And it's more important that you don't upset somebody else. This is as when you're being raised. You're taught to not offend or upset other people, even if it upsets you and offends you.
Mm.
So you're taught from a very young age to consider other people before you consider yourself. And it just stays with us. It stays with us until we get taught the benefits of actually asking for what you want, both cleanly and clearly. It'll always feel really uncomfortable.
Okay. Can you explain that bit where if you're always supporting and doing what the other person wants, you know what I'm talking about?
Can you say that differently?
If there are two people in a relationship and both are trying to give.
Oh, yeah. So because we are raised to, we're praised when we share and when we give to another person and we consider other people's needs and we're just easy to get along with. So that usually means that both people have been raised to be socially conditioned that it's a good thing to give. And it's not necessarily that it's punished, but it's not encouraged to ask for what you want, because we've all heard those sayings, the world doesn't revolve around you, think about your brothers and sisters, share, don't be selfish. All of those little anchor points as a little person stay with us that we're not as important as other people. So that usually raises us to want to give to our loved ones, because that's how we're supposed to show that we love and care for our partners, because we're going to give to our partners and make sure they're happy. As long as my partner's happy, then I'm happy.
Mm.
Right? So what that eventually does is you end up with two people giving. So who's receiving?
Yeah.
And so this is where how resentment comes into a relationship, because you've got two people trying to give. And you can only really give what's been asked for. So if you've got someone or both people struggling to ask for what they want, and you've got two people trying to give to their partner, it just creates this a kerfuffle of just weird things where people are so confused on why you're not connected. And what creates connection is when you know when one person is giving, one person is receiving, both people will feel satisfaction and or gratitude and generosity.
Mm.
But without it, you're going to get stink eye and resentment, and it's unintentional.
Okay, so the how do we go about the clear communication? What's the process?
Again, it's a big conversation, but I always ask people to just notice one thing when they're communicating either with their partners or anybody, is how often you start a sentence with "do you" versus "I want."
Ah, Jesus Christ. Okay.
So I'm going to, most of us have had that dinner conversation. What do you want for dinner? Do you want Thai? Do you want Indian? Do you want, you know, instead of just saying "I want blah, blah, blah,"
yeah,
and just move on with it. We're so busy trying to make sure the other person is happy and the other person's getting what they want, that it just, it's that everyone's had that dinner conversation. Because at the end of the day, no one gives a crap, but we still do it. Why? Everybody's had the dinner conversation. What do you want for dinner? Well, what do you want for dinner? Well, I want whatever's easiest. Stink eye. Why are you laughing?
So you've taken stock of your language, which I love, by the way. That's such an amazing way to expand your awareness, is to first manage, okay, and be aware of what words and what your languaging is. So it's "I want" versus "what do you want?" Do you? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just realized, oh fuck, I'm asking them what they want more than I'm telling them what I want. How do you go about? Because if you just wake up, right, that's it, I'm telling, this is usually what happens in a marriage, like 20 years later, right, I'm fucking sick of it. This marriage is over. I'm going to just demand what I want. And if they don't want it, it's my way or the highway, right? Do you see that?
100%. Yeah. You, love and resentment work in the exact same manner. Okay? So you did not just meet your partner and go, I'm in love. Okay? It's little and often insignificant acts that make you feel loved and supported and accepted.
Huh.
And so that'll fill the love cup up really, really slowly, just tiny little drops. And then over time, your little love cup's full and you look over at that person and you're just like, oh, you know, I really care for that person. I've got love for that person. But then resentment works in the exact same manner, and it works in two ways. You either don't voice what you want, and then you don't get what you want, and then you get stink eye, which is tiny little drops of insignificant things that you think are petty, so you don't want to bring them up.
Ah.
Right? So you don't bring them up because you just think, no, you know, that's just not worth it. But that's a little drop of resentment, a little drop of resentment, a little drop of resentment.
Yeah.
And then I call it two drops of resentment when somebody tries to gift wrap something for you when it's not for you.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, so when somebody tries to gift wrap something they want, they'll often give it to their partner. And if their partner does not have the response or the reaction that you would have if you received it, you can often be accused of being ungrateful.
Yeah.
Now, we've all had that Christmas present or that birthday present that we don't actually want. Yeah. But we're like, oh, thanks.
Yeah, but if we don't say, oh, my God, yeah, wow, this is great, thank you, then they get 100%. Fucking shitty.
Well, like, we're back to that being nice and polite.
Yeah.
We're raised to be nice and polite and not to offend anyone. And so we're going, oh, my God, thank you so much. This is amazing. But in your head, you're like, what the fuck? So we do this in our intimate relationships. We quite often gift wrap the things that we want for ourselves and we give it to our partner so we can have it.
Mm.
And like a hug. Quite often we'll hug our partner and we'll touch our partners because we're saying, oh, I'm going to show you affection. I'm going to make you feel sexy. I'm going to connect with you. And then your partner's like, get away from me.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, I'm trying to be affectionate. It's actually for yourself.
Yeah.
The hug is for yourself, but you're gift wrapping it. But if you say to your partner, look, I want a hug and it's for me. I've had a really shit day and I just need a hug for me. Now your partner has an opportunity to create a connection of real affection because you've asked for what you want. Your partner loves you. So now they can give you what you want versus having to receive a hug they didn't ask for, nor do they want, and now they have to be grateful for it.
Wow.
Where's the mic?
Yeah, so it's almost like once you realize, because I actually went home after that, your speech you did, 6 months ago, and I started using that language like, hey, this is for me, or okay, what can I do for you, and things like that. And then she would ask me, like, you know, can you do something? And I'm like, well, is this because maybe she's asking, oh, maybe you could do that for you. And I'm like, well, is this for me or you? And she goes, oh, it's for me. Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I'll do that for you.
Yeah, that's right. So it's also a bit of a myth that you should, you don't always have to like what you're doing for your partner. So, you know, you might hate rom-coms. But your partner might love, you know, a romantic comedy, but you're willing to do it for her.
Mm.
Doesn't mean you want to, but you're willing to. You're like, oh, I'd prefer an action, but, you know, it makes it happy.
Yeah.
And so it has to be a give and take, you know, like you can't, but it can't always be one way because
you
really can't, that whole you complete me. BS, it's bullshit. It's entertainment, you know, that whole there's a me and a you and an us in an intimate relationship. And that whole, you know, being blended is what actually kills the erotic friction.
Hmm. Yeah, because you don't actually want to be like super fucking dependent on each other. You want to be able to sort of come together, go out, come and sort of.
Of course.
Yeah.
So the things that make a really good relationship is usually what kills hot sex.
Ooh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, because if you become too blended and become too similar, you're not attracted to yourself.
Mm.
And hot sex requires, so good relationships require sameness and agreeability and consistency.
Yeah.
Hot sex is based on polarity, space and opposites. So people that have, now this is not a blanket statement, and actually anything I say today is never going to be a blanket statement because we all come from a different set of circumstances and we all come from different upbringings and parenting styles and all of that stuff. So before we get into the sex talk, there's a big clause with what I say. I'm not here to get everyone to agree with me. So if you agree with the things I say, fabulous. And if you don't agree with the things I say, fabulous, because there's no cookie cutter style solution for anyone. and there's no one size fits all when it comes to intimacy and relationships and what good sex really is and all that type of stuff. So big fat asterisk here. So quite often people in really comfortable relationships will end up feeling more like best friends or roommates than lovers. And what creates erotic friction is space and opposites, which is quite often the reason why you can have really hot sex with someone you can't stand.
Yeah.
And someone you would never be in a relationship. The sex can be amazing, but there's no way you would introduce them to your friends or your family.
Wow. So how do you combine them, I guess, is the golden question.
Well, to combine them, it takes effort. And if people think that chemistry or erotic friction should happen naturally, they're absolutely mistaken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It takes conscious effort and it takes your ability to understand sexual psychology from the sex that you're attracted to.
Okay. Just explain that. So I need to understand how my partner's brain works around sex.
Are you with your female partner?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's on that hormonal, monthly hormonal roller coaster.
What's that?
Well, she releases an egg once a month. So she gets a period. The girls once do that. A month. Yeah. You, my friend, are producing your hormone testosterone on a very even rate.
That was a joke, by the way. girls don't have periods, do they?
Boom, Tish. But you would.
Yeah, yeah. So she's on monthly.
She's on this and you're on this.
Okay.
So quite often, or another mistake that we make is men approach sex very practically and logically with someone who's extremely emotional.
Yeah.
So it can come across like you're brutal, boyish, because you're just like, hey, you want to have sex? And you're like, oh, God. And it's brutal. It can, from an emotional person, it feels like you're being completely brutal. But because you're just going, well, do you want to or not? You're just asking the question.
It's a simple equation. Yes or no? Like, what is it?
Yeah. And we're just like, crikey.
Yeah. You don't just ask for it. Yeah.
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 Well, you can. It just depends on what your cycle is. So usually when we're ovulating, we get a spike of testosterone, which usually means our standards drop and we get really horny. Because we don't want to waste our egg. And we literally do get a spike of testosterone. And that's quite often when women who are ovulating, that's when they usually desire primal sex, a lot of, you know, fucking. They want to be taken because we've had a spike of testosterone and our bodies literally do not want to waste that egg. And that's what our bodies, we can quite often feel like hot, rough sex at that point.
Wow. So how do you, for the listeners, incorporate that hot, like how do you get into the more, I guess, well, I guess I should ask you, what's your definition of like hot, rough sex? Well, not rough, but hot sex.
Okay, I call it primal.
Primal sex.
Okay, primal sex. So we often have sex with each other, but we don't know why. We just do it. Right? So in order for sexual satisfaction to feel like it's nourishing the body, we need to be able to ask for what our body needs, or else we're going to get what someone wants to give us.
Okay. Yep.
Now, another big asterisk here, because this does not apply to all women, but from speaking from my own personal experience, I did an erotic journal to align with my monthly cycle, and I figured out my flavors that I wanted.
No way. That is so cool.
Yeah. So when you can figure out your flavors so that you know that your body is being nourished from an intimate or erotic sense, then you get the spontaneity that you desire and I get my sexual needs met. But we're raised to be nice and polite, so nobody asks for anything, or when you ask for it, it's considered brutal, and everyone's just giving everyone stink eye. So knowing why we have sex is a really big conversation to have.
Okay. So when's the best time to bring up the conversation of bedroom stuff? Like, I like this position. I like it when you touch me this way. I want you to do this. When's the best? Because I'm assuming you're not like kissing and the foreplay for what you're about to do, and then you're having this detailed list of what you want, or how does that?
Okay, so let's go back to the word foreplay first. There's a big difference between foreplay and preparing someone for sex.
Okay.
Foreplay is not preparing someone for sex.
Foreplay is the sex.
Foreplay should be your entire relationship.
Ooh, okay. Wow. Yeah.
Why should foreplay only be 10 minutes before you're being penetrated? Doesn't make any sense.
Wow. Imagine now, that. Everything's foreplay.
Well, what's your definition of erotic friction or foreplay? What do you think that is?
Okay. So the before 30 seconds ago, if you'd asked me what foreplay was, I would say it's sort of the beginning of the build up towards the climax and the action and, you know, the kissing. And I would say foreplay is like before any major sexual kind of stuff's going on, was what I would have said.
Yeah. And which is quite common. Like, that's not an uncommon, you know, outlook to have on what foreplay really is. But so for me, when you learn the skills of erotic friction, that's that. Like, we get into relationships and they stop being fun. Right? They stop being fun. And they stop being fun because you stop doing erotic friction. So without erotic friction, what some people deem as spontaneous sex can often be interpreted as someone just merely being opportunistic. And so if your sexual connection feels like someone's constantly being opportunistic, well, that's when it becomes a task, because there's not enough erotic friction.
How do we create that erotic friction then?
It's an art. It's an art.
It's almost like being really in tune with your body, asking what you want and making them feel comfortable and authentic so they can also follow your lead, I guess, and do the same thing with their body and be aware of their body as well. Because if you have two people sharing what they want, then you can both give what you want, give what they want.
Yep. So erotic friction builds anticipation.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So erotic friction and is going to feel different for different people, but erotic friction is an engagement of your mind. So let's talk about lunchtime. You're going to your favorite restaurant for dinner. And lunchtime comes around and you're like, I'm going to this restaurant. You start thinking about the menu and you start thinking about what you're going to order because you're excited. That is the equivalent to erotic friction.
That's a good analogy. Wow.
But we don't do it in intimate relationships. We just kind of, unless you have the skills to create that erotic friction, and unless you have the skills to connect on different sexual flavors, your sex becomes boring because you blend it all together. So when we can separate and when we can connect on a sexual level that is with some sort of intention, not all the time, but just when that, oh my God, my body desires this, right? rather than we kind of start off slow and then we do a bit of primal, then we go back to this, and then we go. So sex just becomes like blended.
Yeah,
no one knows what's going on.
I remember my very first kind of relationship or sexual partner, it was literally the same thing over and over.
Even though it can be still fun, it can be fun and enjoyable, but it's the same.
Yeah. So it's, how do you just,
I guess you have to know why you're having sex.
Okay.
So yeah, we don't know why we do it. We just do it. And for some reason we think that because we've done it, it should, you know, it feels good, and it does. Don't get me wrong. It still feels good, but you can still feel good having sex and still feel unsatisfied or bored.
So it's almost, I feel like the one of the reasons why sex is important is because it adds that polarity. Because if you're in a marriage or relationship and it's all the same, like you said, the thing that makes a good relationship is like the consistency, the communication, the structure or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you throw in that like fire sex sort of bedroom thing, then it kind of adds in that anticipation and friction to the relationship, and it can improve the connection and the relationship.
Well, yeah, so intimate relationships are like an onion. And it's extremely intertwined. So I'll just give you a quick summary of what people need to be aware of when they're considering their intimate relationship. So you need to be able to have an uncomfortable conversation where you feel safe to have an uncomfortable conversation and feel vulnerable to ask for what you want. You need to be able to have fun with your eroticness without contaminating it. So when I say contaminating it, is as adults, we can quite often go from, hey, how you doing, straight to the bedroom. Right? We kind of forget how to do the canoodling. Keeping your pants on is hot as. But as adults, we never keep our pants on. We're just like, oh, we're adults. Let's shag. And it becomes rinse and repeat because there's not enough fun and anticipation, which is the chemistry part. Then we need to be able to know who we are as our unique self and not become blended, because that's when you suffer from what I call Bert and Ernie syndrome. You never saw Bert without Ernie, and you never saw Ernie without Bert. So, you know, when you become those people, the sex in that relationship is okay, but it's never hot.
Mm.
Okay. You need to be able to have the freedom to be yourself so that you don't feel like you're stuck and you don't feel like you're wholly and solely responsible for your partner's happiness, because that shit gets old real quick. And it becomes a burden when you've got what I call a barnacle. If someone's a barnacle, you're like, ooh, you know, because you feel like you can't breathe. It will suck the life out of you. And then we need to learn how to touch, because we're not taught how to touch. And this one's super important, because it doesn't matter how well you kind of find someone sexually attractive and the communication's really good. If the touch is kind of close but not there, or you don't know which direction it is, your body kind of slightly repels it. But because we're nice and polite, we don't want to offend our partner by saying, hey, I don't really like that. You also don't want to kill the mood.
Yeah.
Right. Then you don't want to end up in a shit fight or an argument. So you just put up with it for a few minutes because you know you're going to move on to something else.
It's a little drop.
Well, it is. It is. But your little drop is a teaspoon. It's not a drop. It's a teaspoon. If it costs your mental health, your sexuality, your genitals or your body, that's not a drop.
Fuck.
That's a teaspoon. And quite often people will mistake compromise with sacrifice. So, if it's at the cost of your mental health, your body, your sexuality, your genitals, doing anything to, you know, that you just, your body is just giving you this massive signal of either slightly repelled or completely repulsed, that's a sacrifice. And we've only got so many. We can only sacrifice so much and then we're out. I'm out because it's too hard.
Yeah, I never understood when people said compromise. I'm like, I don't think it is. I think it's you get in a relationship and your partner says, hey, I really like it when I get my feet rubbed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at first, I'm like, I've never done that. I don't know. And then you start doing it and you're like, wow, at first it was a compromise, but now I'm seeing how much love and affection I'm giving my partner and how much energy it gives them. Now it's not it started maybe as a little compromise, but now feeling like.
Yeah. Let me help you there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So compromise is, Mitch, you want a blue car and I want a red car and we agree on a white one.
Okay. Yeah.
That doesn't affect either one of us. Nah, I preferred red. You preferred blue. We settled on white. It doesn't actually affect us. It doesn't affect how we actually relate to each other. So a compromise is when it's an outside, outside choice. If our body gives us a signal that we ignore, it's a sacrifice.
Right.
And sacrifice can be glorified. And I'm not a big fan of, you know, living with someone who is selfless is just as hard as living with someone who's selfish. They're exactly the same. One's glorified, one's not.
Well, so it's combined. It's the selfish is saying, which has been denigrated by society, right? And so, you know, you can't ask for what you want. You can't say that gift you got was bad.
You're a narcissist.
You're meant to just say thank you. Yeah,
you're a narcissist or an asshole if you ask for what you want. But if you go, you know, I'm a giver. I just give all the time. Oh, no, I don't want anything. It's all about everybody else. You're just as big as a pain in the ass as the person who's selfish. There's another mic drop. But it's glorified.
Yeah.
Being selfless is glorified. Being the person who gives all the time is glorified. But then you're ripping people off the opportunity to give to you.
Yeah. Seems pretty selfish to me.
And then you complain that you don't get anything.
Yeah.
Go on.
So let's talk now and get into the bedroom sort of the bedroom specifics.
Sure.
What really makes great sex? Let's say we can have the uncomfortable conversations, we can have fun and not contaminate it, we can speak up and not sacrifice. How do we now have great sex in the bedroom?
So I think we need to be able to connect on probably four different levels. So the first one is intimacy. We need to be able to hold hands, kiss on the forehead, the spooning on the couch, the cuddles, you know, the man hugs, I just think are amazing. Just that nourishment we get from being interactive with another person without it being sexual. No genitals, no cheeky pinch on the butt, no, none of that stuff, just actual, you know, nurturing touch to one another.
Mm.
And quite often that's so missed. And just do a bit of an asterisk here again. I think a lot of men kind of want sex, but they actually probably need touch. Mm-hmm. But the only way they get touched is by having sex.
Mm.
And so I think if, you know, I'm stereotyping, but I'll do it anyway. Big gruff, you know, high vis, steel cap boots, has had a shit day at work. is not going to walk in the door and say, oh, you know, I've had a shit day. I just need a hug. He just won't do it.
No way.
He might be exactly what he needs.
Yeah.
But it's not deemed as, you know, masculine. Don't get me started on that word. It's just not something that kind of is the normal, but I wish it was, because quite often it is the affectionate touch. I did a survey a few years ago and 80% of men said they wish they were touched more, and 80% of women said they wish they could touch their partners without it leading to sex. So both people wanted the same things. We just aren't able to do it in a way that nourishes the relationship, because it becomes a bit of a gift wrap. So that's the first element of when we can get nourishing touch, it'll lead on to hotter sex.
Mm.
Right? So the other ways that we have hot sex is our ability to dance with polarity. And so this is another bit of a deeper conversation, but I'll give you the short and dirty version. Most women are working during the day, and so are men, right? So we've got two incomes coming into a house, and we've got two people walking in the door that have been in go mode all day. So when you walk home, you walk into your front door, sorry, now you've got two people who want to be in flow mode, because you've been in go mode all day.
Mm.
So there's no polarity.
Hmm.
Back in the day, women didn't work. We used to weave baskets and pick berries and, you know, have babies. That's all we did. But modern day world, and it's never going to change, and nor should it, but this is just so that I can help people understand how erotic friction actually happens, is you need to be able to create polarity. So if you're both walking in the door needing to get your needs met, there's no polarity.
Right. Okay. So I'll give on Monday, you give on Tuesday.
Well, this comes down to hormones and nervous systems.
Okay.
So, and, you know, men can be often branded these Neanderthal thugs that don't feel anything. You guys feel way more than we do. Like your body can react to sensation like this, you know, what time is it? And you got a chubby. Your bodies are highly sensitive to arousal. You can literally turn it on if that's what you want. And that's why men can fall asleep really quickly. And yeah. It drives us crazy. We're like, if that's a goddamn superpower. Women are always scratching their heads. How does he just fall asleep like that? And it's because you're finally feeling. Men are super finely feeling. It's women who don't feel. We're emotional, which is different to what our bodies need.
Mm. So. Yeah, I just got that image in my head of like a girl walking past and all the Neanderthals going, huh? Just like instantly, like in the mood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But we need to be able to engage our flow mode and our go mode seamlessly. It just takes the hormones in a woman's body longer.
Okay. So the way I interpret that is from the 80%, 80% thing you did is for a guy, it's not to be attached to the sexual, like the actual sex, the penetration, that form of sex. Like, let's think of, hey, me going and touching her and hugging her and asking her, hey, touch me, hug me. And then not expecting her to, okay, she's going to come and touch me and it's not going to lead to sex. I don't want to put that expectation saying it's not going to lead to sex. I just want a hug, or I just want to be touched, or...
Mm. a few things pop into my mind with that. I'd be interested to, you know, it's quite common to hear I've got a high sex drive.
Mm.
Doesn't mean it's high quality though. So, you know, are you having sex with your partner to nourish her and the relationship, or are you just having sex?
Wow. Nourish them and the relationship and you.
And yourself. You're always going to toot your own horn if you know that the sex that you're providing your partner and your relationship is satisfying.
Wow. Imagine if every time you had sex, you felt amazing, she felt amazing, or your partner felt amazing, and the relationship got even more amazing.
You absolutely have that power. I don't even believe a lot of men understand how powerful what you're packing in your pants really is. If you think about sex as a physical act, you have the ability to leave the person that you've had sex with feeling really loved and connected and felt and, you know, just appreciated as a woman, or you can leave her completely empty.
Oh, fuck.
The act is exactly the same. What's different? Your intention.
Wow. And that's a... Before I... You listed number one, number two. Is there a number three?
For the intimacy? For the different flavors of sex?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have intimacy, which is the non-genital, just nourishing touch. You have what I call connective sex, which is that, hey, how you doing? It's that side eye that, you know, do you wanna, which is perfectly fine if there's erotic friction, okay? And then you have what I call darker primal, that more hot kind of ooh la la sex, that the ravishment.
Mm.
And then we have the last one, which I think is a dying art. And if you actually, if we could actually connect with how amazing this is and how nourishing it is for the relationship and ourselves, we would do it a hell of a lot more. And that's lovemaking, slow sex, really, really slow sex. Majority of people are swiping and they're having junk food, shallow sex. They're just doing, you know, shallow fucking.
Mm.
It's like living on McDonald's for the rest of your life. You know, and don't get me wrong, like some, I'm all for snacking, but you can't live on it.
Mm.
You can't live on it. Well, you think you can, but you're never going to feel nourished. You're always going to be hungry for more, which is why we just keep swiping.
Yeah.
We just keep swiping because there's no nourishment in that junk food sex. But don't get me wrong, I'm not against it. I think sometimes we should snack, and I think some people should snack a hell of a lot more. But, yeah, so intimacy, intimate connection, connective sex, which is just that, you know, you're in an intimate relationship to have, like, to have sex with each other, that's fine. Primal and lovemaking, slow sex. We totally underestimate the power of slow sex.
In my masculine brain, I'm like, okay, let me start tracking all of the times we have sex and chart what type of sex it is, and then plan, like, obviously.
Wouldn't it be easier if she just asked for it?
Right. So it's getting her to ask. Yeah, I'll take a number.
Oh, actually, today. Big asterisk, she first has to feel her body.
Okay.
She first has to have a really good connection with her body. Now, we do not see women moving anymore. Women are sitting in chairs all day. We are sitting in a chair. We are sitting on our pleasure center. We are sitting on our hips, which means we are stuck.
Hmm.
So asking a woman to ask, if you ask a woman what she wants, most women will say they don't know, and that's a perfectly reasonable answer because she probably doesn't.
So So how do we help them figure out what they
want? Can't send her to me. Send her to me. Women actually learn through resonance, and we learn through mimicking. Men learn through logic and strategy.
Okay.
So because women, at no fault of our own, we are very robotic. Our bodies are very rarely in a non-linear mode. We are just, we're on task. We're on task all day. We are sitting on a chair 8 hours a day, and then all of a sudden we're told to get our groove on. It's not an easy ask, which is quite often why people need harder, stronger sex, bigger, stronger vibrators.
Like sex toy vibrators, don't you mean?
Yeah. You know, you got the jackhammer wand, you know, they're just getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, right. Okay. You're saying they don't understand their bodies are sitting still all day. That's why they need that.
Well, it's not that they don't understand their bodies. If you only train your legs, you're not surprised that your arms aren't strong.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So we are training our bodies to ignore ourselves, and we're sitting on our hips all day. So a woman's pleasure center is in her hips, and we're sitting on it.
Wow. So what do you,
Non-linear movement.
Hmm.
We need to move. We need to move our bodies. And I'm not talking about dancing. Like, dancing's fabulous, but as long as it's not to a step. Because if you're doing it to a step, it's still structured.
Really? What kind of dancing's not to the beat, to the step?
Well, dude, if dancing, doing some sort of dancing is better than no dancing. But if you're stuck in your mind going, I've got to get it right, I've got to get it right, then you're just doing more of the same.
Hmm.
Non-linear movement.
So what do you recommend to the girls? Can you give me a little taste of your events?
As in, what do you ask? Say that differently.
What do you teach at your events that gets women to start being more aware of their bodies and doing the non-linear things correctly?
Yeah, so every women's workshop, I will teach them a non-linear practice. And depending on what event you attend, I always incorporate practices designed for a woman's body. And they're usually really subtle. And they're quite underestimated because we always want it to be big. We always want it to be significant. And, you know, I tell someone to go and, you know, do something that's quite subtle. They don't value it yet.
Yeah.
Yet. But the more your body feels, the less you need. So then you don't need that jackhammer set. You don't need that bigger, stronger vibrator, because your body feels more. Your body is in tune with the subtleties of what you're feeling. But if you don't feel your body 8 hours a day, it's like trying to start the car that hasn't started in 6 months and it's chopped up on wheels and has the handbrake on and no battery.
Yeah, fuck.
So we're trying to get our bodies to get our groove on, and we're trying to get our bodies to go from 0 to 100 after we've been in go mode all day, which is what men's bodies are great at doing. Ours not so much. We're on the hormonal roller coaster, and no one teaches us how to seamlessly go from go mode to flow mode, from black and white to color, to getting shit done, to having some fun. It's a big ask. It's like it's too far apart. We need to be able to bring that so that it's like this, but it's like this. It's hard.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That was fucking awesome. Wow.
Did it make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is why we can't drop.
Black and go from black and white to color.
Yep.
That's go so from, cool.
Well, when you're in black and white, you're just getting shit done. You're on task.
Yeah.
You got deadlines. You know, people to see, places to go. This has got to be done. That's black and white. Either did or didn't happen. Then we have to be able to seamlessly go into color, which is where we're creative and where we have joy and pleasure and non-linear. And it's just, you know, we're just relaxing. We don't even value relaxing. It's considered lazy.
Yeah.
Or unproductive.
It's
the very thing most women's bodies need is relaxation.
Yeah.
Because what kills pleasure is tension and stress.
Wow. I had something that I just... But surely there is some interaction between stress and pleasure, because you're stressing. Okay, what if it's this way? I'm going to be stressed about being upfront with my partner and having that uncomfortable conversation, so we can, I'll have the stress of the uncomfortable conversation at the front, and then the back, we can have that pleasure rather than just.
Are you talking from your perspective as a man or her perspective as a woman? Which hormonal and nervous system are you referring to right now?
Probably mine.
Yeah, well, so your body works differently. And your body also handles stress differently too. So quite often, again, not all, but a lot of male bodies, you know, they kind of like the adventure and the spontaneity and the risk. That frightens the hell out of us. We're just like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. You're like, why not? And you want us to be all spontaneous, but you're basically wanting us to act like a man.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
We need protection. And when I say protection, I'm not talking like we shouldn't earn money and all that type of stuff. I'm talking about our hearts need to be protected, because, you know, we're designed to procreate. So we need to know that we're protected. Our bodies are protected. I think that's probably another good point to make, is we underestimate making us feel safe. You know, I quite often ask men, you know, when you walk to the car after a movie or an event or, you know, a bar, are you scared? Are you?
Me?
Yeah.
No way, no. No, okay, so the realization, because I know where you're going, is obviously girls are fucking like, obviously I'm that's petrified. Really scary. Yeah.
I'm petrified.
So when I first met, like, if you're a guy, can you think of a moment where you've, I don't know, been in public or walking past and you see like a fucking giant hunk man. Of a man, and you're just like, oh my fucking God, he could kill me. Like, absolutely pick me up and just crush my head like the mountain in Game of Thrones. That's how women feel all the fucking time.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day. So I'll have my keys in my hand. I'll know exactly where my car is and I'll beeline it.
Yeah.
And the second I get in my car and I sit down, I shut the door, the first thing I do is lock it.
Wow.
Always have. We need to be able to learn the skills to make people feel safe, because without the safety, you're never going to be vulnerable. And without the safety, you're never going to ask for what you want to deepen the sexual connection either.
Yeah. I feel like that's a good kind of full circle, is like, or everyone wants like the top of the pyramid, like, yeah, like let's have hot sex all the time. It's like, hey, well, do we even know how to be honest, be aware of ourselves, and then communicate that, and then, you know, go from go mode into flow mode, and be aware of the cycles and the polarities, and like there's so many layers.
It's an onion. It's a goddamn onion.
Yeah.
I get it. And this is why people can have a lot of love for each other yet feel really disconnected. So it's a massive onion, and we just need to be able to normalize learning about sex and intimacy. I don't want people waiting until their relationship is in crisis before they learn stuff, because it's not that it's too late, but you're behind the eight ball. We go to the dentist twice a year to maintain our teeth. We get our car serviced every 10,000 Ks to maintain our car, but we don't do the same. We don't put the same amount of conscious effort into maintaining our relationship. We just hope. She'll be right, mate. Until it's not.
Yeah. So what's, I feel like there must be some sort of driving force behind all of this, like a stronger reason or vision you want for your relationship. Or is there anything behind, like if you go to a job that you fucking hate and you don't have a vision for your life and something like that, and then you come home and it's, you know, what are the importance of developing the other areas of life for your relationship and loving what you do? Not just loving your partner, but loving every aspect, like loving your friends, loving your family, loving your job, loving your body, loving your spiritual practices, things like that.
Yeah. So I want people to design their own relationships and not subscribe to what we've been sold. You know, you complete me. Just, you know what, and that's why I can't give that cookie cutter style answer to that's going to suit everyone. And that's why I said earlier, you know, if you agree with what I say, thumbs up, and if you don't, thumbs up, because ultimately I want you to design the relationship that works for you.
Okay. Yeah.
Not Walt Disney and not Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts. You. And that might look really odd. You know, I constantly question, you know, when people say, you know, oh, we go on date nights, and then they tell me about it. I go, no, you didn't. You just went out for dinner. You're just telling yourself it's a date night because you've been told to go on date nights. But maybe date night isn't what you need. Maybe it's something else, but you're just doing what you think you should be doing. We need to have those proper conversations. There's lots of things. There's lots of things. I can't answer that.
ask for what you want, really.
Well, it's just not that easy. So saying that is, you know, can be saying that can be quite dismissive as well, because we don't have the skills to do it.
Get the skills to ask for what you want.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, ultimately what I do, because I want to give people an opportunity to explore how they show up in an intimate relationship. And it's not that it's bad. It's just, you know, it could be different. And I don't want to teach people in a way that's, you know, dry and clinical. Everything I offer is always fun, funny, and informative, because I don't want it to feel like a class. You know, who else says stink eye? You know, it's, relationships are supposed to be fun, and so should learning about them.
Yeah. Is there anything I didn't ask that I should have asked you that you want to share that people need to hear?
Big question.
You think we covered it?
Yeah, well, look, it's, oh, I suppose if a relationship ends, it doesn't mean it failed.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. So that's, you know, I think there's a lot of people that feel obliged to stay a lot. And I think it's not, if a relationship ends, it doesn't mean it's failed, but it's how it ends that determines that. If you can do it with integrity, you know, but if you've got to destroy someone or, you know, traumatize them for years because you don't have the skills to have an uncomfortable conversation, then that's on you.
Do you have time? Can you keep going, or we?
Oh, you ask. You keep. This is you land the plane whenever you want to land the plane.
Okay. Is there like a set framework for touch, like certain places to touch, how to touch, when to touch, or is it completely individual and that's not something you can kind of?
Okay. So there are four different types of touch. Your body will feel four different things. It'll feel relaxed and connected. It'll feel aroused and excited. You'll feel slightly repelled or completely repulsed. You gotta try and stay in the first two.
Yeah.
The second two are where you'll resentment. Your body's signal is going to go, no, you know, it's close, but it's not what I want. But if you're not asking for what you want, don't expect to get it.
Yeah.
And if you're making your partner guess, or you think they should know, then, you know, you're a lot of things, but mind reading is not one of them. Trust me. Mind reading is not one of them. And just because they love you does not mean they know.
But definitely doesn't mean they should know.
No. This is the analogy that I use when I help people understand the importance of actually asking for what you want. If you're ringing up, you know, Palo's Pizza, you would never ring them and say, oh, could you just make me a pizza and it makes me happy if you're happy? Oh, but I get off if you get off. You would never do that. You would never ever ring a pizza place and not put your order in. You just wouldn't. Or if you did and Palo's Pizza rocks up with, you know, a spicy Mexican with seafood and anchovies and you're like, oh, you wouldn't go, oh, you got the order wrong. You'd be like, oh, fair enough. Didn't ask for what I wanted, fair enough. And you'd be very forgiving to him.
Yeah, that's, oh my God. Because it's like, yeah, you do whatever. It can't be that bad. But you have this expectation of like not that bad. And then you get it and you're like, oh, well, no, that's definitely not what I wanted. Well, what?
Anyone who's saying do whatever you want is saying, are you done yet, in their head.
Oh, that is the number one worst line in sex.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Is okay, so do whatever you want is it's like parent-child dynamic because you're not contributing. It's the starfish. Do whatever you want. You know, do whatever you want. Well, throw me a friggin' bone here. There's two of us in the room, or three or four, whatever. So it's so much easier if you actually contribute. Right? So that's that nice and polite doesn't belong in the bedroom, and laid back and easy going doesn't belong out of it.
And if you want your woman to be fierce in the bedroom, you need to let her be fierce outside the bedroom.
Don't expect the tiger in it if you're quashing her out of it. If you shush her out of it, don't expect a tiger in it. If you can't handle her authentic expression outside the bedroom, you can't handle it in it, because we can definitely out-beep-beep you. If you unleash a woman's sexuality, it can be scary. Think about it.
Well, it's the classic feminine energy. The man builds the ship and has the fire on the ship, and all the men are on the ship, this nice wooden built ship, and then they're in the ocean and then there's a big fucking thunderstorm and there's crazy waves. That's the feminine energy.
So that comes, I agree with that, as long as it's not abusive.
Right, like if she's yelling and abusing you, and define that.
I, Well, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Tantra for this very reason. So I love, love, love so many of their practices. I really do. My heart just, you know, smashes open. But then they use words that are subject to interpretation. So they're subjective. So, oh, I'm just in my feminine. And you're like, no, you're not. You're being a cow. You know, but then you can say, no, no, I'm just honoring my feminine. No, if you're abusive, you're abusive. And a lot of the tantric practices when I was in it was that the man, the masculine present man, had to weather her storm. Well, not if it's abusive. No, he should not weather her storm. He should walk. So I'm not a fan of some of the wording that is used because it's unclear.
Yeah.
It's unclear. So weather the storm as long as it's in integrity.
Mm. What are some other tips with that getting into polarity? Like the example you used before of both getting home from work. Is that like, you know, you have a hobby or one of you is on dinner duty or one of you like you both have separate rooms in the house to watch your own show? Like what's the, does everyone have their own thing or?
Well, yeah, it's so what we need to be able to determine is who's holding the structure and who's going into flow mode. So to give you an example or some sort of story behind it, and sorry to go back into the caveman days, but it kind of makes sense when you explain it this way so that you can relate it to what it's like to be in the modern day. Women actually live together. We were very supportive. We lived together. You know, I would be pregnant and I would have a nursing child and I would have literally four or five women around me and we would be in our flow. We're flowing. and then the space would be created because you're the hunter-gatherer and you go out and, you know, kill meat and all that type of stuff and then you bring it back. So then when you come home, I've been in flow mode the whole time. So now I've got the energy to hold structure for you while you go into flow mode. Now, we talked about non-linear movement before, didn't we? Mm-hmm. So when do men move their bodies in a non-linear fashion?
Sex. No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So quite often, you know, it's you resetting yourself. You've been in black and white all day and the sexual movement is your body being in non-linear. Control, alt, delete.
Yeah, I think that's what the boys call post-nut clarity. Have you heard that before?
Well, I can figure it out.
All the guys listening are, oh, yeah. Yep, I know that.
Post-nut, what is it?
Post-nut clarity.
Which is fine if you're giving the sex that nourishes the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's not just the hump and dump sort of.
Yeah, if you're just like blowing and going then, and you wonder why she's not like, oh, please, let's do that again.
Yeah.
Like that's like having ham and pineapple pizza for dinner every night.
Yeah.
It's like if she, or if that's the only flavor you've got, and she, don't be surprised if she can take it or leave it.
Mm.
Because what's in it for her? Nothing.
Mm. So that's the guy's sort of non-linear reset. And then the girls, when they're all like sitting around together throughout the day with the nerd, is that their non-linear or what?
Yes and no. We're not taught how to do it. We women need to kind of, I'm a natural born nurturer. I've got a womb, breastfeed, all that type of thing. A woman will actually receive love from a natural born nurturer faster than they do their intimate relationship, their partner, their male partner. Because most, all right, let me unpack that so you look at the confusion. Right, so in a modern day world, women are comparing and competing with other women
Yeah.
Oh, she's thinner. Oh, you know, she's fitter. Oh, her hair's beautiful. Her nails, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're just sitting here just comparing and competing. And then we go home and we download our day onto our partner like they're our girlfriend. So we kind of need to stop mentally fucking other women.
Oh, I just got it. Oh. Wow.
We are mentally fucking other women where we should be loving and supporting each other.
Oh my God. Yeah, and then, yeah, fucking hell.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Women should be in circles. We should be attending. Anyone who's listening, find yourself a good women's circle where they're men and sex positive.
Yeah. Not a
perhaps. No, don't go to a man hang one.
Yeah.
Go to one where it's sex positive and family positive and really loving and supportive, because when women gather in a loving and supportive nature, we feel loved. We don't feel like we're being judged. We don't feel like we're not competing and comparing. And then that fills our love cup up like there's no tomorrow, which then we can go home to our families full. Wow, not empty. Then you can go home and your man instead.
Yeah, so that's because life is just a game of comparisons, and if we're just constantly fucking other people in our head, because it's not just girls that do, I'll compare other people and like basically fuck them in my head and then do the same sort of thing and say to my girlfriend like, oh yeah, wow, this and this and this, instead of my mind's kind of blown now, so
that's okay. We can land the plane.
Where can everyone find you? What kind of events have you got coming up? And
so this is going to be my last event for till winter. So because I teach in I've got a studio that's kind of an inside outside room, so it's going to be starting to get too cold. So I've got this weekend a workshop called Handle Him Like a Boss. Told you about that one. I don't need to explain what happens there. It's my favorite. I freaking love teaching this workshop so much. It's so much fun. I love watching the confidence in women, because I teach them all the sexual confidence they need in a way where they're filling their toolbox up and they've got access to other tools, you know, real tools. I'll teach them how to touch with their hands in a way that will relax and arouse you at the same time. And I'm also got Be That Guy on Saturday for the men, which I love working with men, because you guys just, I can just give it to you straight.
Yeah.
I don't need to, you know, I can just, you guys love the strategies. You kind of just, you just want me to give you the short and dirty vision, everything you need, nothing that you don't. But yeah, I've just, you know, if you drop my name, Wala, spelt Wala. There's only one of me in Adelaide, I think. And just, yeah.
There's only one of you in the world.
Yeah, potentially. but yeah, hopefully your listeners have got a lot out of today. And if they need to reach out and have a chat, like, I'm open to people sliding into my DMs and asking questions, because I'm genuinely here to help people. You know, we're not taught how to be in relationships, and if I can help people get clarity around love and connection, then, you know, that's what lights up my heart, and that's why I'm here. You know, I love love at the end of the day.
Wow, same here. I love love too.
I love
love. I love you. I love everyone listening. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me on, and I really hope people got, you know, some nuggets out of this, and it helps them understand themselves and their partners more.
Oh yeah.
You're welcome.
Like, subscribe, give your feedback, comments, and any questions. And yeah, we'll get back to all of you, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.